You're listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Today, we're going to talk about the novel coronavirus with representatives from YKHC.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Mitchell Forbes with YKHC's Public Relations Department. We're here today to talk to all of you about COVID-19. So I'm going to have everyone who's with us from YKHC go around the table and introduce themselves, if you'd like to start. Dr. Hodges?
Sure. I'm Dr. Ellen Hodges. I'm the Chief of Staff at YKHC.
I'm Rania Boyer. I'm the Vice President of Village Health and Workforce Development at YKHC.
Hi, I'm Dan Winkleman, President and CEO at YKHC.
So, Dr. Hodges, I know there's a lot of information floating around about the virus, you know, where it came from, you know, what it looks like. There's some differing reports from all kinds of different sources about what the virus kind of looks like symptom-wise. So maybe we can start out by talking about, you know, what is this novel coronavirus? What does it look like when someone gets it?
Yeah, so we think that this novel human coronavirus will most likely be similar to other coronaviruses. When people get this illness, they'll have a fever, cough, shortness of breath. We expect runny nose, sore throat, and other symptoms that are common with a cold. That's what we think the virus will be like, and that's what it has been like in other places. The issue with this virus and the reason why it's concerning is because this is a novel virus. That means no other humans have been infected with this virus yet in the world. So there is no natural immunity among the human population. So everyone who is exposed to this particular type of virus is potentially going to get it. There are other coronaviruses that are constantly circulating in the population. That's why we all get colds from time to time. There's influenza viruses that are constantly circulating. But at any given time, there are portions of the population who have already been exposed to that particular virus and already have immunity. The difference is that for this virus, no one has immunity yet. So we all have to be careful because of that reason. This illness, about 80% of the people who get it will have a mild illness. They will have a cold or no symptoms at all. About 15% will be ill enough to require hospitalization, and about 6 to 8% will get very ill. This virus, we know, disproportionately affects the elderly. Most of the people who have been seriously affected by this virus are those who are over the age of 80. And then the people who have required to be hospitalized, mostly are over the age of 60 or have other illnesses that put them at higher risk, such as chronic lung disease, chronic heart disease, kidney disease, and so on.
And so for that, before we get to those more vulnerable populations, for that 80%, what is treatment going to look like for someone in that 80% of the population, say, you know, fairly young adult who doesn't have underlying health conditions, if they get this novel coronavirus? What is treatment or care going to look like for them?
So this is supportive treatment like you would for any other cold. We would recommend that people use ibuprofen and Tylenol to control their fever, increase their fluid intake, and most importantly, avoid trying to get other people sick. So we want people to cover their cough. We want them to wash their hands frequently. We want them to disinfect surfaces that they're around, and as much as possible to self-isolate and certainly stay away from any elderly relatives they have if possible. That's probably the most important thing, is to practice good respiratory hygiene and good hygiene generally speaking, and try to stay at home and stay well that way.
Yeah, if I could, this is Dan, and I've been in villages for the last 2 days, and I've spoken to 10 to 15 different elders, and I can't stress enough how important it is that people begin to get serious about this and start changing their behaviors. Most of the elders I spoke with weren't really aware of the COVID issue that's going on right now, that the whole world is talking about. And we need to get serious about it and start socially distancing ourselves. We also need to really get prepared. So 14 to 30 days of food is really important. And we need to just start washing our hands and avoid handshaking. And in the villages I was in, I didn't see any of those sorts of behavior changes happening. So it's now's the time to get prepared. It's not time to panic, but we need to get serious about it.
The other thing that's important that Dan mentioned that I'll just emphasize is this concept of physical distancing. This virus is spread by droplets. And we think the droplets go about 3 feet from people. And they also live on surfaces, and they can live on surfaces for several days. So this is the way the virus is spread. It's spread directly through droplets and also through touching things that have that a person who's infected has touched. So staying 6 feet away from someone is important. And that's when we say social distancing, that's what we mean. We mean 6 feet away and covering your cough and cold and wiping down surfaces where that you touch frequently. We call them high traffic areas, doorknobs, countertops, things like that. If you're going to the store, wiping down your cart, all those kinds of things to just sort of limit the amount of virus that's out there in the public.
Okay. And so kind of on that, keeping in the vein of treatment and things like that, we can maybe talk about, we have Rania here to talk about, you know, our villages more specifically, and we'll talk about villages here in a moment. I was hoping maybe Dr. Hodges, you can talk a little bit about what someone should do in Bethel if they, so we know right now symptoms are looking like a dry cough, fever, and shortness of breath. And so if someone has those symptoms, what should they do? And they're here in Bethel.
If they're here in Bethel, we're asking that they call the nurse triage line and to get some better direction on what to do. The last thing we want people to do is to come to the hospital if they have mild symptoms, as this is a place where many of our vulnerable elders already are, and we don't want to spread the illness as much as we possibly can. So if people are mildly ill, they can call the nurse triage line. In all likelihood, once we know that this virus is present in our community and people are catching it from each other, we call that person-to-person transmission, we're going to recommend that most people self-quarantine and stay at home if they're mildly ill, and that they only come to the hospital if they need treatment at the hospital other than ibuprofen, Tylenol, and increasing fluids. So calling the nurse triage line and showing up at the hospital only if you consider yourself to be at risk or need further treatment.
And for reference, that the Bethel nurse triage line, which is a phone number that you should call if you're in Bethel, that number is 543-6949, and that's a line that we've set up specifically for COVID-19 that will help you get in touch with our emergency room. So that way, you're not showing up to the hospital if you do have the virus. We want to protect our customers. We want to protect our employees and make sure that we're aware of folks coming into our facility that might have the virus. And so I think this is a good time to maybe pivot from Bethel and talk to Rania a little bit about what our village responses is looking like. If you want to give a quick overview of kind of what your group in the Community Health Aid Program has been doing to prepare for it.
Sure. So, excuse me. We've been preparing over the last several weeks on making sure that our health aides are prepared to answer questions that people might have when people call. We, as we do in Bethel, we encourage people to call before going to the clinic if they have some of the symptoms that Ellen, Dr. Hodges was describing. And during the day, during regular business hours, they can call the clinic and they can talk to the staff at the clinic as they're open. After hours, they're directed to the nurse triage line as well. And again, you know, we've made sure that the nurse triage line has protocols to know how to ask questions and help a person that may be having the symptoms of COVID-19. In the event that somebody does have those symptoms, a health aide will be talking with a provider here in Bethel or one of the RMT providers. I think it's usually the emergency room provider or on-call provider that will help the health aide to follow the protocol that they need, that they have in place to help with a patient that might have COVID-19.
And I know one of the areas of concern that's popped up, we held a teleconference earlier this week for some of our tribes. And one of the questions that we did hear about is we do have some villages in our health system that either have one health aide, they only have a single provider, And we have some villages right now that don't have permanent health aids. So maybe you can talk a little bit about what YKHC's plan is for those villages.
Right. So we have a pretty good itinerant PA nurse practitioner group now. And we have a plan that we've been working on to make sure that we have coverage in those villages that don't have a health aide or have only one health aide, so that we can, as much as possible, provide continuous coverage. Those providers will be on site, available to answer questions, to see patients, and to provide testing if it's necessary. So for all of those villages, we have currently about 9 villages that do not have a health aide. Those villages will have coverage, and there is a plan to use those itinerant PAs and nurse practitioners and float health aides as available to provide coverage to those villages.
Great.
Hey, Rania and Dr. Hodges, if you could explain, let's say we had a positive in one of the villages, what would change? Can you tell them about how we would increase testing most likely at that point?
Yeah, for right now, we have fairly limited testing available through the Department of Health and Social Services. We also have partnered with a commercial lab to send testing off. But again, just like everywhere in the United States, we're having limited capacity for testing, and we're trying to save the testing for patients that really need it, our healthcare workers to keep them healthy, and patients who are ill and need this testing done for the purposes of cohorting and infection control. Once we know that we have widespread coronavirus in our region, we'll ramp up our testing. So what this will look like in the villages is we're working on training all of our health aides. The way that this swab is collected is a special way to collect the swab, so we need to make sure all of our health aides are properly trained in how to collect the swab and safely transport it. And once this is done and the testing equipment gets to the villages, we can start testing in villages. We really hope to get that up and running by April 1st. We have run into some supply issues with results to testing kits. This is a nationwide problem. This isn't limited to the YK Delta. Once we get that up and running, we would like to be able to test people in villages. Here in Bethel, we're going to set up a place to test people outside. This is a virus that is highly contagious, so we are trying to keep people as safe as possible and keep our healthcare workers as safe as possible. So we'll have a method to set up to test people without them having to come into the hospital. Once we have our first positive case here, we're going to set up our emergency operations center and institute many of these things so that we can look for more of the virus and safely contain it as much as we possibly can.
And I know there's obviously almost every detail of this virus has been changing on a near daily basis. You know, the CDC is updating their guidance daily, and there's a lot of information that comes out. But maybe you can speak to Dr. Hodges what our testing criteria is as of this moment, with the understanding that obviously we're recording this on Tuesday. This will air tomorrow. So it could change between Tuesday and Wednesday. But if you can maybe speak broadly about what our testing capabilities are, you know, how that whole process works, and who we're particularly interested in testing.
So we're following the Department of Health and Social Services and the CDC guidelines for who should be tested. So people need to have a cough, fever, and difficulty breathing, shortness of breath. Those are the criteria that we're using. Generally speaking, they need to have high-risk travel. Since we don't have person-to-person transmission in the Delta at present, we're considering this travel outside of the region. But again, as Mitchell pointed out, this can change from day to day. Last night, we found out about the positive cases in Fairbanks, and so we're taking all this information in, and we're processing it, and we're changing our testing strategies and our testing criteria literally from hour to hour as things go by. We're also having a special focus on our healthcare workers. We know that in other areas that have been very hard hit by the viruses, keeping your healthcare workers healthy helps our patients. So one of our focuses is on testing our healthcare workers who have been potentially exposed to COVID patients.
Okay, thank you. And I know one of the questions that has popped up a little bit. We heard this on our teleconference that we heard that we hosted with our tribes yesterday. One of the questions that has popped up is how will like self-isolation or quarantine work for folks. Obviously, they're multi-generational households in Bethel, but I know many of our villages, a lot of our homes are multi-generational households. So either Rania or Dr. Hodges, maybe we could speak to some of the guidance or advice that we have on that subject right now.
So for right now, I would strongly recommend that people go to the cdc.gov website and look at the home isolation guidelines. They're very clear there. It'll be difficult in homes that are crowded with multi-generations, but making sure our elderly are separated from sick people is absolutely critical in this particular illness, because as I mentioned earlier, we know that the elderly are particularly vulnerable to this disease. So keeping them separated from sick people is important. Limiting the number of people who have contact with the elder in your home is also important. So you could designate a person in your home who is responsible for assisting the elder if they need assistance with food or dressing or bathing. Those are really important things to keep in the back of your mind. Making sure that you're limiting the number of people who come in and out of the home to greet or speak with your elder. This is difficult. I know this is hard for people to do, and we're not saying this has to be forever, but in this period of time while we're trying to limit the spread of this virus, it's important to keep our elders safe, and this is the best way to do it, is to sort of self-isolate the person and limit the amount of contact the person has with that. Generally speaking, the cdc.gov has excellent resources with regards to community, school, and workplace decontamination and management of the COVID in this day and age, and they update this website on a very regular basis. And we draw our guidance, and our decisions are all made guided by CDC website as well as the Department of Health and Social Services as well. So it's important to keep that in the mind. And there's a lot of misinformation about this virus, a lot of myths out there on the internet, especially on Facebook. And I would constantly urge people to avoid that and go to the CDC website, get your information from a reliable source. The Department of Health and Social Services at the state of Alaska also has a very good website. So just use good information to inform your decisions.
Yeah, and I'll chime in on that, YKHC, we've pulled together a bunch of resources from the CDC and state of Alaska and put it in one spot on our website. If you go to www.ykhc.org, on our homepage right now, we actually have the first thing you see when you go to YKHC's website is COVID-19. You can click Learn More. We have a whole page that we've pulled together resources from credible sources that we're constantly updating with new information, prevention tips. We just put out this morning some more in-depth information about social distancing and hand washing and suggestions for staying home when you're sick. So we've talked about how kind of individuals as it relates to, you know, to folks in their homes staying home when sick. Maybe Dr. Hodges or Rania, one of you can speak to what YKHC is currently doing to protect our customers through way of our employee screenings right now. What are we doing on the employee front to make sure that our employees aren't getting sick with the virus and spreading it to their coworkers or our customers?
Sure. So following the CDC guidelines, we're looking at the threats that people have for traveling outside of their hometown or the region or the state or even the country. And we're implementing some of those practices at YKHC for our employees. If they've been traveling, they have to follow those guidelines in terms of, if you've been out of the state, you're required to monitor your temperature for 14 days, monitor your symptoms. If you are sick, you're required to self-quarantine and stay at home for 14 days. If you've been outside of the country to the high-risk countries that have been identified by the CDC, you're required to self-quarantine and stay home for 14 days. So again, looking at the CDC recommendations, we're looking at those constantly to see what they recommend that businesses do, and those are a couple of the recommendations that we have been following for the last couple of weeks.
Thank you. And one of our big priorities right now is preventing the spread of this virus. As Dr. Hodges said, it is very contagious. Yesterday, Monday, we started health screenings at the entrance of our hospital in Bethel. Both on right now, we have two sides: the hospital, the emergency room side, and then the new clinic side. Dr. Hodges, do you want to speak to that a little bit?
I sure do. So, what people will notice when they come into the hospital is that you need to have a reason to be at the hospital, either an appointment or a specific destination in the hospital in order to come in. This is to limit the amount of people that are in the hospital and to limit the amount of contact that people have with other patients who are in the hospital. You'll be asked a series of questions if you screen positive. So if you answer yes to any of the questions that the people at the front door are asking you, you will be asked to place a mask on your face while you're in the hospital. And this is to limit, obviously, the sick people that come into the hospital. If you have an appointment, when you get to your registration for your appointment, you will also be asked those questions again, just to double check and make sure that you are sure about your answers and that you get a mask on while you're traveling around in the hospital to protect both yourself and other patients, and as well as our healthcare workers. It's important to note that you see lots of people wearing masks around, and it's important that the sick people are the people wearing the masks. Well people, generally speaking, should not have a mask on. The reason for this is that for those of you who are not accustomed to wearing masks, people often touch their face more when they're wearing a mask than when they're not wearing a mask. And that's one of the ways this virus is spread, is by touching surfaces that are contaminated and touching your face, including your mouth, nose, and eyes, and getting infected. So people who are well, generally speaking, do not need a mask. And so we're asking the mask be reserved for the sick people who need to wear the mask to prevent the droplets from infecting other people.
That's a really good point. And coming back to CDC guidance, a lot of the information that we're sharing is either coming from the CDC or the state of Alaska. The state of Alaska has pulled together a really nice coronavirus website. But that's one of the biggest pieces that I've seen kind of shared over and over again. And in so many different places is if you're not sick, don't wear a mask. So in that kind of same realm, one of the other big things, I know we just did, Dr. Hodges has done several media interviews on the subject lately, but one of the other subjects that's been discussed heavily as it relates to healthcare is the idea of flattening the curve as it relates to the number of cases and the capacity of the healthcare system. I guess that would be sure. A good thing for us to talk about.
Yeah, so I think that's what all these measures that we've been asked to take by our government and by the CDC and by the state of Alaska is what it's meant to do is, I think that a certain set number of people, we think about 60 or 70% of the population, will eventually become infected with the coronavirus. What we'd like to do is spread that 60 or 70% of our population out over several months instead of several weeks. This will allow our hospital not to go past our hospital capacity. This will allow the state of Alaska, which has a limited number of ventilators and ICU beds, so we won't exceed the capacity of the state of Alaska, to accept our overflow of patients. So it's meant to take the amount of people that will get infected and spread them out over, say, 3 months instead of 30 days. This will allow us to not exceed our surge capacity for the care of respiratory patients.
Right, and I think that's really important because as great as it would be to be able to kind of respond to this coronavirus outbreak in a vacuum, that this is the only thing we're worried about. We obviously have, outside of COVID-19 that we're thinking about, we also have several other respiratory illnesses and kind of normal hospital operations that right now are still happening, and we need to be able to, you know, have room in our hospital. We still have mothers giving birth. We still have RSV. We still have flu. And so this COVID-19 outbreak is just yet another thing on top of it that we need to be able to manage our capacity. And I think one of the biggest things that I think is really important for YKHC right now is helping. Spread good information, and I know we've already touched on this a couple times, but I think it's something really important as I look around on social media. You know, we've been posting several updates from YKHC about the coronavirus, ways to prevent it. I just want to really emphasize that the There are a bunch of credible sources out there that are providing great information. The CDC is updating their website daily with guidance for almost every like part of the country. So the CDC has provided guidance for healthcare professionals. They've provided guidance for businesses. They've provided guidance for first responders. But they've also provided a lot of information for what people can do at their homes in residential settings. And obviously the state of Alaska is in there doing the same thing. And so I just want to really emphasize the importance of getting your information from credible sources. So as we've kind of hit on most of the big COVID-19 points, I want to maybe talk about with the information that we have now. Obviously, this could change. Like, what does this look like for what should people be thinking about in the next, you know, 2 or 3 months in terms of like social distancing? Because you mentioned earlier flattening the curve, spreading it out over 3 months instead of 30 days. So, I mean, this kind of sounds like something that we should be kind of settling in for a bit of a long haul on. Maybe you can talk about kind of that a bit more.
Sure. I don't think any of us know how long this potentially could last. All we have really is modeling data from China, where they had where the outbreak started and how this came to pass, and how they were able, using strict quarantine measures, were able to decrease the amount of cases. I'm certain over the next days and weeks we'll get information out of Italy with regards to the same, as well as the European Union, and here in the United States in Washington State, who are also experiencing a large community outbreak with person-to-person transmission. So we will constantly inform our decisions about when these measures need to be changed, when these measures can be eased up, as we get more and more data. And I think that's important to note, that we're going to change these decisions based on evidence and data that we get from areas and learning from experiences from other places, because this is a new virus. We don't know much about this. I think this is relatively unprecedented in the United States, probably the world, with regards to this kind of measures being taken to control the spread of a virus in our global society. So I think that's important to keep in mind, that the information is constantly changing, and like Mitchell said, we really encourage people to use reliable sources to get your information. CDC.gov is probably the most important place to go get your information, but the Department of Health and Social Services has stuff. YK has links to things that will be reliable, and really trying hard to use reliable resources to inform your decisions. And as we move forward, understand that this is very changeable. Again, whatever we're saying today, right at this moment, may change by the end of the day. And to keep in mind that these are the kinds of things that will need to be updated extremely frequently while we learn more information and we change our course and change what we're doing to protect our healthcare workers and our patients and our families.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about management and communication. So, clear, concise, accurate, timely information is critical into managing and fighting COVID-19. And we started at the end of January with working with the state of Alaska and the CDC and attending their teleconferences, their weekly teleconferences that continue through mid-February. And that's when I put a team together. We have about 40 different leaders from across the company on actively and assessing our readiness for COVID, and then taking actions. And we've been taking actions weekly and daily, and as of late, hourly, and in a variety of ways in preparing for this. We've also, regarding communication, we had our first communication with all of our 58 member tribes yesterday. We've been working with businesses in the region and organizations here in Bethel for the last month, over a month, and we've been having a bi-monthly teleconference with them. That's now going to go to a weekly teleconference, and that's going to be with any organization that is currently on our list, as well as all of our tribes and tribal governments. And so that will be a weekly teleconference that happens on Fridays. And Mitchell, I think you have the details on if there's a tribal government out there that wasn't able to make the last call, who can they get a hold of?
Yeah, sure. We've been working on updating our list of tribal contacts, things like that. So if there's a tribal government out there that that's a member of YKHC's compact and you did not hear about our teleconference, you can send an email to publicrelations@ykhc.org. And just a quick note there letting us know what tribe you're from, what's a good phone number and a good email address for you, and we'll happily add you to our list. Planning to have weekly teleconferences with several partners, including our member tribes.
In addition to that, we're also airing four public service announcements that are on this radio station and two other radio stations that cover our region. So KYUK here in Bethel area, and then KSKO in McGrath, and a Nome radio station
to reach
KICY that reaches the lower Yukon. And with that, we're able to cover the entire region with those PSAs. We're working on a new PSA that is going to be going out probably by the end of today. That's specifically for the 14 villages in our region that don't have clean water. And that may be due to a variety of reasons. They may not have a water system. They may not have a water system that works, or it may be frozen, mechanical issues. And anyways, there's 14 of those. And so we're working on communicating how people in those villages can have access to clean water that's been chlorinated, where they can wash their hands and keep their hands clean, which is critically important regarding COVID preparations. So that's going out today. And again, most everything that we communicate internally to staff, we are also sharing with businesses and other organizations in our tribes. And there's a weekly email list that goes out regarding that. And how can people who are not on that list get a hold of that guidance?
Sure. That's the same public relations mailing list. So if you just send us email, publicrelations@ykhc.org, as Dan mentioned, we've been sharing mainly prevention tips with local businesses. Those are just kind of quick, short little tips that we're happy to share with anyone. So shoot us an email, publicrelations@ykhc.org, and we're happy to add you to the list.
And then finally, the other way we're communicating is, besides posting on our website, we also are posting on our Facebook page. And there's a Facebook news line that you can see how old items are. And it's generally, there's posts going on there every couple of days or as needed.
Yeah. So we're kind of wrapping up at the 30-minute mark, but I guess I'd quickly open it up to Dan or Rania or Dr. Hodges and see if there's kind of any last kind of closing points that we might have that we want to touch on.
So for me, this is Dr. Hodges. I would say cover your cough, wash your hands, and physically distance yourself. I think someone made a comment, we don't want people to socially isolate themselves. We want to physically isolate yourself. So still reach out to your family and friends, but try to stay 6 feet away from them while you do that. Cover your cough, wash your hands, and disinfect your work areas if you're at work.
Yeah, and that was going to be my final thoughts, too, is just to reemphasize that message from Dr. Hodges, just making sure that you're practicing good, practicing good hygiene in terms of washing your hands, covering your coughs, and not spreading germs as much as possible.
Great. And then I'll, of course, put a plug out there one more time for YKHC's website, www.ykhc.org. Visit us there. Right on our homepage, we have a link to a lot of information about COVID-19. In addition to the CDC and state of Alaska. There's a lot of information coming out about this outbreak. And so I would just encourage you to stay up to date with that. And so with that, I'd like to thank Dr. Hodges, Rania, and Dan for taking the time to join me on this show. And of course, thank KYUK for taking the time to host us today. Thank you.
The novel coronavirus brings a lot of uncertainty. Are you prepared for 2 weeks in your home? Consider stocking up on subsistence and shelf-stable foods like canned goods. If you are on chronic prescription medicine, have at least a 3-week supply on hand. YKHC has made accommodations to allow early orders for many medications, but not all. Talk to your pharmacist for more information. Stay up to date by visiting ykhc.org/COVID-19. That's ykhc.org/COVID-19. If you have symptoms like a cough, fever, or shortness of breath and think you have the virus, do not go to your village clinic and do not go to the emergency room in Bethel. Instead, call your village clinic or, in Bethel, call 543-6949. This message brought to you by YKHC and KYUK.